You're listening to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef. And for the next hour, we're going to tackle popular nutrition topics from a scientific lens, promoting fact over fiction with no BS. RuPaul's Drag Race, start your engines. Wait, I don't know how the theme song
says,
goes.
Gentlemen's, or is it gentlemen start your engines? I mean, what's the best woman win. Like,
oh, gentlemen RuPaul's Drag
start
Race.
Your engines and may the best woman win.
For somebody who's watched all 85 seasons, I'm kind of disappointed myself for not knowing that.
I literally only watched one.
Well, I was just going to say this is amazing news to me because I had no idea, and congratulations for joining the bandwagon.
We'd
love to have you.
I'm in love.
I can't remember who's on. So this is season 13?
Yeah.
Who's on it? I don't even remember.
Okay.
There's so many seasons.
So the first one that comes to my mind is Vanjie.
Oh,
but it's
that
the one.
Season.
It's Vanjie's like second time on, and like Brooklyn.
It's like
Heights
Crystal Method.
And, no, there's no Crystal Method. Plastique Tiara.
Yeah.
Raja,
okay.
O'Hara.
Raja.
What's her name? There's one that I really like. I can't remember their name now.
Yeah.
And Evie Oddly.
Yeah. Oh, that season.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Akiria Davenport.
Akiria, yeah.
I loved Akiria.
Yeah.
She's so good.
Don't tell me who wins.
No, I won't.
Okay.
The amount of time that goes into the makeup and just like
no.
literally just like putting it on.
Pat
the
and I
hours
were saying
that, it takes.
That. And their like their outfits and their looks.
Yeah.
They make those. It's
yeah.
They and then they are dancing and they're singing. Like they're so talented. I am just like
it is
literally
really
in
like,
awe.
They put their bodies through the ringer.
Seriously.
Which is something that I'm never going to be prepared to do.
Yeah.
I don't know how anybody
does really
that.
They really do. Yeah. It's amazing. I'm very into it.
You have to have a really good skin routine if you're doing that.
All that
like.
Makeup? Oh, yeah.
All that makeup. Or you're just going to be like a raisin, like all dried out.
Yeah. All the makeup and then like dancing in the makeup and like you just get sweaty and like, oh, gosh. Yeah. Like
you. Do you have a drag name?
I don't. I'm sorry. I know that you do.
You know I have mine.
Yeah. I love it. Are you going
to
tell
and
the
And I need
listeners?
To say it publicly because if somebody ever steals it, then I can go back to
okay.
this and
okay.
say,
so,
I came up with that.
So what's your drag name?
My drag name is Chamomile, but spelled chamomile.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's my drag name.
Wait, do you need like a last name? Or like Chamomile?
No, I'm like Beyonce.
Just, okay.
Strike that from the record because I'm not.
I am Beyonce.
Who's another mononym person, but like that's not cool? I'm that person.
I can't.
Popeye?
Think. Okay. There you go. I am Popeye. Okay. I. Transitioning.
What? I don't know. That was really natural. I don't know why you're saying that. You're gaslighting me in front of everybody that listens to our podcast.
Oh, no. Okay, let's transition to the topic of our episode. I really am like chomping at the bit here to tell everyone what we're talking about and who we're having on the podcast today.
For people whose goal was to be more current with this season, I think we're doing a really good job because this is about as current as you can get this episode.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Don't you think?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. We are skipping over the BS of the week this week because we have a really special guest on that we just wanted to kind of center the whole episode around. So we are welcoming Alyssa Rumsey. She is a registered dietitian, and she's a non-diet dietitian. She has a private practice, a really successful one.
Certified intuitive eating coach.
She's a certified intuitive eating counselor.
Counselor.
launch, or is launching, her new book, which comes out February 9th. So yeah, we're really very current.
And guess what? We are in the midst of reading it. So while having this conversation, we've been lucky enough to actually know a bit about what's in the book, and yeah, we really like it so far. Yeah. So
we're impressed.
You know, if you happen to be able to check it out, check it out. It's coming out on February 9th, which will be, I think, 6 days from now. So mm-hmm. it's probably already available for pre-order. It is available for pre-order, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, so we hope you guys enjoy our interview with Alyssa. It was really, really interesting. It was powerful. I learned a lot. I'm sure that you guys will too. And yeah, you guys should definitely check out her book as well. So let's just get into our interview with Alyssa Rumsey. So we are here with Alyssa Rumsey, and Alyssa is a nationally recognized dietitian and nutritionist who is passionate about empowering women to reclaim the space to eat and live unapologetically. It is dieting that is the problem. It disconnects us from our body's wisdom and holds us back from living life to the fullest. So Alyssa aims to help explore the history of food and body while questioning societal expectations to get to the bottom of the complexity and find a clear path forward, free of diets and understanding health and nutrition. So welcome Alyssa. We are so excited to have
we
you
really
on,
are.
clearly, to No BS Nutrition. Now I'm going to let you kind of introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners and just tell us and everyone a little bit about you and your work as a dietitian.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to be chatting with both of you. So I am a registered dietitian. I often use the term nutrition therapist because that seems to encapsulate what I do a little bit better. I'm a certified intuitive eating counselor, and I'm the founder of Alyssa Rumsey Nutrition and Wellness, which is a weight-inclusive nutrition practice where we work virtually with clients one-on-one and through group programs to help liberate themselves from dieting and just find more peace with food and their bodies.
I really love you've kind of created your business as a one-stop shop because your educational background is also so well-rounded. Not only is there the dietetics aspect of it, but there's also the exercise science part of it as well. I know you've done like recipe development and you continue to do that kind of stuff as well. So it's really a one-stop shop. So it's very cool to see what you've done.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, my background is pretty varied, and certainly that continues to inform the work that I do today. My original background was in both nutrition and exercise science in college, because I thought at first that I wanted to do sports nutrition, and did do that for a little bit, and don't do much with that now. But certainly when it comes to, you know, joyful and intuitive movement and helping people, you know, be more in their bodies, you know, from the movement perspective, that is very helpful.
Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't say this before, but I have been following you on Instagram for, I think, a few years now. And so I was really excited when we had the opportunity to have you on. And I really look up to the work that you do. And now you are coming out with a book. So that is very exciting, and congratulations. So your book, Unapologetic Eating, focuses on helping the reader make peace with food and transform their lives as a result, which is amazing. So maybe if you could tell us a little bit more about the title, Unapologetic Eating, and maybe tell us what that is or what that means to you and how you came up with that or how that concept came to be.
Sure. So the book, so really Unapologetic Eating to me means getting back to who you were and getting back to your roots, like before society told you who you should be. So this certainly goes with food and eating. So unapologetic eating means, you know, eating what you want, when you want, how you want, without feeling guilty or ashamed, or without feeling like you have to explain or justify, really being able to be in the moment with what you're eating and what you're doing without feeling self-conscious or without, you know, worrying about like, oh, what are other people thinking? And, you know, really with the book, what I wanted to do was in my work over the last few years with clients, what I've realized is that, you know, it starts with food. Like they come to me because they're like, okay, I have this like problem with food and dieting and my body. And really what it comes down to is food is kind of this symptom of this bigger problem. And when we start working on their relationship to food and their bodies, so much else in their lives change. And so that's really what I wanted to kind of speak about in this book, is kind of this process from going from trying to like fix yourself or change yourself to unapologetic eating. And then finally, like the unapologetic living piece as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that holistic perspective is so like, so very obvious in the way that the book is written, because it is broken down into those four parts, like fixing, allowing, feeling, and growing. And people will know what we mean when they pick the book up. So can you walk us a little bit through those parts? I there's something in there for everybody for sure. And just being a neuroscience student, as soon as I saw a chapter called Your Brain on Diets, I was like, I'm reading that one first. And I loved it. So yeah, do you mind talking to us a little bit about how that holistic aspect of the book works?
Yeah, sure. So really, you know, when I was writing this, I wanted it to be certainly educational. You know, I'm someone who like loves the science and the research, but I also wanted it to be really practical. And I wanted it to be something that people could pick up. And yeah, some people might like read it straight through, but also you could read it and then have reflection prompts and questions and practices to do. So I wanted it to be both educational and practical. And I set it up in those four sections that you mentioned, the fixing, allowing, feeling, growing, because really it's about, you know, the fixing part goes into, you know, again, I mentioned before, food is a symptom and it's not the problem. And so fixing is more like, okay, really understanding the history of diet culture and our culture's kind of beauty and body ideals. And that's where the Your Brain on Diets comes in, and really the truth about health and nutrition and weight science. And I also have part in here about just exploring and helping people dig deeper into their own history with food and their body. So doing a lot more reflection. And, you know, I talk about all these different things that can cause us to have, you know, disconnection from our bodies and disconnected eating. And then it's really about, okay, how can we move from this fixing or trying to change ourselves to just kind of allowing ourselves to, you know, begin to take steps to move away from this, whether it's dieting or like controlling food intake, controlling your body, and sort of allowing yourself to, you know, be with what that brings up for you. And so this is the part where I talk about, you know, a whole chapter about cultivating awareness and mindfulness, because this is really, in my opinion, kind of the foundation, because until you're aware of what's going on, it's really hard for things to start to change. And a lot of times, you know, it's human nature, I think, for us to want to be like, well, I just, okay, here's the problem. How can I fix it?
Right.
And it's like, you know, and like the allowing is like, okay, let's like give this some time. Let's try to unpack some more. Let's try to connect to your body and just like be with it. This is also where I pull in, you know, intuitive eating, and, you know, I'm a big fan of the book Intuitive Eating. And so I didn't want to, you know, recreate the wheel. It does not need to be recreated, but I wanted to present it in a way that was maybe a little bit different, and, you know, talk about it in ways that I find can help with people depending on the experience that they've had with food. And then from there, it goes into feeling. So, you know, when we stop fixing and start like allowing ourselves to be, right? Like a lot of the thoughts and feelings that oftentimes I find people have been like suppressing for years, if not decades, you know, and have been controlling their body to like numb and to control and suppress these things. And these all start to bubble up to the surface, right? Like as you feel more into your body for like hunger cues and fullness cues, you feel all these other things too. And that can be really difficult. So this section is really about, you know, self-care and like sitting with these feelings, how you can work through these feelings. I also talk about self-compassion. I have a whole chapter on that because that's really important. And also starting to talk about redefining, you know, your relationship with your body and what do you want that to be like and feel like. And we also talk here in that chapter about like body respect and, okay, you know, at this point, how can you, even if you do not accept your body or love your body? Like, how can you respect it? And then the fourth part is growing. And this was actually the part that was most fun for me to write. This was when I was doing my table of contents at the beginning, this was like the least fleshed out. Like all the other parts had like all these bullet points and all these ideas. And I had like three bullet points. And my editor was like, well, as long as that last section ends up being like about the same number of chapters, it's fine. And I was like, oh boy, okay, we'll see. And actually, so I was a little nervous because I was like, what am I going to write in here? And it ended up being like one of the most fun parts to write because, you know, when we start to learn to trust ourselves around food again and, you know, not have this like out of control feeling, it really allows us to trust ourselves in so many other areas of our life. And I think when we start to question these food beliefs we have and these body beliefs we had, we start to question all these other things as well. And, you know, for a lot of people that I work with and myself, you know, this can be really, really kind of like discombobulating of like, wait, I have thought this like my whole life, or I always thought like this was me. And now maybe it's not, but like, who am I? And like, what do I want out of life? And so I really wanted to walk people through just some different ways to start to do more self-exploration and self-discovery, and really learn to be more connected to their body and to their intuition, not just with food, but with other things as well. And so there's a whole chapter on embodiment and like being in your body. And then the last chapter is really how you can, in this growing, like how you can step into your power and really embrace that power more.
Love that.
Wow. Yeah. So interesting. One thing, so Tarek and I have started reading the book, and so far, I mean, we're both really impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love it. And one thing that even, I don't know if it was just even in the introduction or the first chapter, you talk a lot about, and you've already mentioned it, but you know, the history of like beauty standards and body standards and dieting and different diets. And that is something that for so many people, I mean, number one, we don't realize like where all of like all of that history and where all of these things come from. And then when you do realize it, it's a lot of unlearning and, you know, pushing away all of those things that we grew up like feeling like we had to look this way or we had to do this for beauty or make our bodies look this way. So that's something you talk about a lot, unlearning. And I know that I mention it a lot with clients of mine too, that a lot of, you know, people who come to me or, you know, they're ex-dieters and they want to improve their relationship with food. When I talk to them, I mention unlearning as well. And I know that it can be a really like uncomfortable thing to do or a tough thing to do. So I'm wondering like how you envision your readers doing this and, you know, unlearning and what do you recommend for them in terms of additional support as well?
That's such a great question because this process of unlearning and like challenging these beliefs that are often like very deeply held and go back to, you know, generally childhood and, you know, process of like questioning those. Also, a lot of it is like challenging social norms. So you can kind of feel, it can feel very lonely and feel like you're kind of like going against this like big tide. So I think the, you know, thing that's so important in this is finding community. So finding people who are also in this process, who are also doing this work of unlearning and of challenging social norms and of, you know, coming back to themselves. And, you know, there's a lot of great opportunity now for community within the online space. I mean, there's some, you know, informal community, certainly like over on Instagram and with different, you know, that's always something that I encourage people to do is diversifying their feed and really, you know, being intentional, right, about like who they follow.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of free Facebook groups that can be really helpful for people. And then there's also, you know, different kind of like paid sort of groups and support groups that are not, that are like the lower cost or not as expensive as like a one-on-one, but really gives you that community. And I think, you know, that's also was part of my goal with the book was to help people realize like, oh, I'm not alone. Because I don't know if you guys hear this, but I hear this a lot of people are like, I did not, like, I always thought this was just me struggling with these things. I had no idea, right? That like so many others do. And, you know, but then finding those people when, I know for most of the clients I work with, they're like the only one in their lives that's not dieting and that's trying to kind of challenge these things. And that can be really, really difficult. So finding community, I think, is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so true that I, some of these stats were in your book, I can't remember the exact stats, maybe you can, but it was just mind blowing, like the amount of people who diet. I think, you know, it was like more than 50% of Americans like have gone on diets or things like that. And I don't know if that's, don't quote me on that because that's probably not the right statistic,
but even things like, I think like around 40% of like children younger than 12 years old or something like that are even experiencing these feelings of wanting to be on diets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's been something that's so normalized in our culture that people just think like, well, this is how it's supposed to be. And like, this is, you know, it's just so normalized. And in reality, you know, there was a survey, I think it was done in 2018 that I mentioned in the book, that basically showed that 3 out of 4 women have some form of disordered eating. Wow. And, you know, about 60% were disordered eating. And then about 10 to 15% were like clinical, like diagnosable eating disorders.
Right.
And I think that's just right there, right? Like 3 out of 4 women think or feel or behave, you know, in a disordered, disconnected way around food. But yeah, a lot of these things, and I did a post on this on Instagram recently, people were like, whoa, I've never, you know, dieted. Like dieting is a form of disordered eating.
Absolutely.
Yet it's, right? But it's so normalized that you say that and people are like, wait, what? But like, no, I thought this is what I should be doing. So yeah, I think it's really important for people to just, yeah, understand that no, that's actually not, you know, that's not normal. And that is like, can be really problematic and, you know, helping people kind of put together the pieces on how it has been harmful in their own lives.
That's a really interesting point. Like, we talk about that all the time about how not only do diets not work, but they can even be, they can be quite harmful. And I think that has little to do with what you were mentioning earlier as, you know, food is the symptom, not the problem. So I don't know, it would be cool to hear you talk a little bit more about that, digging into a bit of, you know, how diets are actually harmful to our health and not just ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I think there's kind of like two pieces here. So certainly the piece of, you know, the statistics on how, what, like 95%+ of people who lose weight on a diet will gain it back within 2 to 5 years. And not because there's something wrong with them or their willpower, but just like this is biological. And this is what our body does to try to keep us alive. And, you know, so we know that dieting does not work for long-term weight loss. And not only that, but it's also associated with the increased risk of binge eating, eating disorders, long-term weight gain, food and body preoccupation, lower self-esteem, weight cycling, which is like that yo-yo dieting that a lot of people experience, right? Of like lose, gain, and weight cycling itself is an independent risk factor for poor health outcomes. Right. So, you know, all of these things, I think, you know, because people tend to sort of like blame themselves of like, oh, this is like, it's my lack of willpower. Or like, oh, I just need to like get back in control. But really, no, you know, this is not like, this is actually your body doing what it's kind of quote supposed to, what it's biologically wired to do. And, you know, I think sometimes when people hear those statistics, it can be, I was talking with my intern about this actually earlier today of like, there can be a lot of shame and blame of like, oh my gosh, I've been doing something that's like just screwed up my metabolism more, or, you know, a lot of shame for kind of that. And so I think it's really important, you know, in sharing those statistics. And I use, you know, they're in the book and I do think it's important for people to know, but at the same time, I think it can sometimes be counterproductive because yeah, people then just like feel so badly that they feel so much shame that they've been doing this for so long. So I think that that's the point of, you know, when I say food is a symptom, you know, not the problem. And again, like how you feel about your body, you know, the problem is not with your body. The problem is with our society. And this is really that first chapter of the book. That was actually the last chapter that I wrote. The first chapter of the book was the last chapter that I wrote. And because I wasn't, I wasn't sure, you know, when I was going to be introducing these things. And I just realized the more I wrote that, you know, having this foundational knowledge of these different societal forms of oppression and how they came to exist and how what we know is like diet culture today, which really is fat phobia, right? Of like being afraid of being fat and putting thin people or straight sized people like on a pedestal. Right. That actually has these historical roots in racism and colonialism and sexism. And, you know, while those people who are dieting today are, you know, doing so knowing this, I think it really does help to zoom out and just be able to better understand that, like, you feel this way about your body, not because something is wrong with you, but because like this has literally, like, these body ideals had literally been baked into to our society and to these different systems of oppression in order to keep people, you know, lacking trust, like not trusting themselves, because when we don't trust ourselves, then we can't be in our power. And that is what those in power want. Like, they don't want, like, basically the white men who are in power in our society. You know, the way that they've maintained that power is by oppressing other groups of people and dieting and, you know, trying to achieve this certain ideal and, you know, oppressing folks and marginalizing folks to the outskirts of society who don't meet this ideal is like one way of keeping people not in their power. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you can, like, I find with the people I work with that this, like, zoom out to be like, okay, this is bigger than me. And this, you know, just to kind of understand how these different systems of oppression are interlocking, and how it's more than just, you know, this problem with food or your body, that it's really this bigger, more systemic issue. I think that can be really, really helpful.
Right. Yeah. There is obviously so much involved in all of this, right? And I really love the beginning chapters are such a great 101 intro to this. And I think you also have an educational background in health communications as well. So, and that really shows through because you break it down really well. I really appreciated it. And you even discuss some of the biological aspects, you know, aside from the societal ones, like set point theory and so on, that people might not be so familiar with in a really easy to grasp way. And I think one of the more common things that maybe people have trouble with, or maybe are, you know, very frequently misunderstood, is intuitive eating. And, you know, you talk a little bit about in your brain on diets, you talk a bit about diet culture pivoting all the time. And I think, you know, diets being less trendy these days, or maybe traditional diets being less trendy. And like you were saying, many of these companies or maybe influencers pivoting diet culture and using it in other ways to promote weight loss through eating foods, let's say, quote, like in moderation, which they'll often refer to as intuitive eating. You know, so this term intuitive eating has often been co-opted. And I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about how intuitive eating has been used incorrectly and how that might actually be harmful in the long run.
Sure. So yeah, you know, as we've seen this rise in intuitive eating becoming more mainstream and people hearing more about it, it has been co-opted. Sometimes I think not necessarily from a malicious standpoint, but I think other times people like knowing that they're co-opting it and co-opting the language in order to sell their own diet program. And, you know, intuitive eating as a framework is something that was developed by, you know, Evelyn Tribbley and Elise Reich in the 90s. But really intuitive eating is just, again, getting back to like how we were born to eat. And, you know, as you said, like as consumers are kind of like wising up to some of this dieting language, the dieting industry is having to shift. And so they're co-opting some of this. So for example, like Whole30, they talk about like finding food freedom through doing their super restrictive month-long plan, right? And I think, you know, a way to tell is like anytime that there is, well, certainly anytime something is associated with weight loss, and this can be a little tricky because even Whole30, they will start to say like, oh, this isn't about the weight loss. But then if you like keep scrolling, they promote, they're like, oh, you should take a picture, consider taking a photo at the beginning of the month and a photo at the end, right?
My eyes roll all the way to the back of my head every time I see something like that.
Yes. So again, it's still you know, the underlying message there, even if it's not explicitly stated, is like, oh, this is for weight loss. So I think, you know, really looking for those messages to see, you know, what is the underlying message? Noom is another one that I'm thinking of, which is an app that also has co-opted a lot of the intuitive eating language. But when you sign up, it's like, what's your goal weight? And then, you know, if you're like, do you want to, or like it asks you, I mean, they're changing it all the time, but I know the last time I was in there, it was like goal weight. And then what are your goals? Like, and weight loss is one of the options. So yeah, certainly anything that positions, you know, weight loss, this is not intuitive eating, and really just anything that places the locus of control outside of yourself. So, you know, well, this calorie level, or you shouldn't eat these foods, or, you know, things like that. So anytime that there's something talking about that and they're not talking about like, well, how does this food feel to you? And like trying different things, like that's not intuitive eating if it's like something external.
Right.
I love that.
I like that you mentioned Noom. I think I mentioned this in one of our recent episodes. I don't know why it came up, but I think at one point Noom had somehow, like on Google, when you searched intuitive eating, Noom was like at the top of the search. And it's it like obviously had nothing to do with intuitive eating. And it's, you know, it's a diet app that's claiming not to be a diet. And that made me so angry. And yeah, it's interesting that you say, and I agree with you that, you know, some people who may be, you know, co-opting or promoting intuitive eating, but not necessarily be promoting intuitive eating, it might come from a place of not a malicious place, like, you know, a place of maybe just misunderstanding, or they haven't fully taken the time to understand it yet. And I think that that's something that's really common when, because I hear this all the time, and I'm sure you do too, but I hear people say, you know, oh, well, if I ate intuitively, you know, I would eat donuts and pizza and like candy all day. And, you know, to me, that's just a sign that that person, you know, obviously doesn't really fully understand what intuitive eating is at that point. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about why that's not actually true and what actually happens when you do truly eat intuitively.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's probably the number one question that I get when people first, they're like, well, this sounds great and all, but yeah, if I was going to eat intuitively, this is what my body would want. And I get that because that can feel very, very real. And if you have been keeping certain foods off limits, or you have been dieting or trying to kind of control your food intake, then yeah, those are the foods that you're going to want when you're like, you know, intuitive eating is really about like, okay, what sounds good to me right now? What do I want to eat? And yeah, you know, and again, this is this biological drive of any time that we are restricting. So whether that's restricting calories or keeping certain foods out of our house, or even if they're in our house, we're thinking of them as bad and like feeling guilty if we eat them, our body interprets that as starvation is coming. So even if we, you know, those of us who are food secure and have lots and lots of food around, our bodies are still wired from thousands of years ago. So our body doesn't know that. And they're literally just like, oh, they're, you know, starvation's coming. They're not going to let me have this. This means like, I got to like store up for later. And that is actually what causes our drive to eat to increase. So, you know, there's kind of this honeymoon phase that people refer to it as, when you do start, you know, letting go of these restrictions and allowing these foods to be around. Yeah, you probably are going to eat a whole lot of pizza or donuts or whatever it was that you were restricting. But you will get through that, and you have to go, you have to allow yourself to get through that period, because twofold. One is that you have to reduce that feeling of starvation or scarcity in your body. You have to tell your body like, no, 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 there's enough, there's abundance, this will be here, I'll still let you have this again. So you have to reduce that to kind of turn off that biological drive to keep eating. But also it's the science of habituation. So the more and more that you eat and allow yourself to eat certain things and have things around, they lose its power over you. Yeah. You know, I always say like, okay, if you really did have pizza every night in a row for 7 nights, do you really think you're going to want it? Like after that, probably no, you're going to be like, give me something else. I do not want to see another slice of pizza. And that can feel very like scary, and it can feel hard to trust, but like it happens. Everybody gets through that honeymoon period and comes to a place where that urgency just decreases.
Yeah. Yeah. That was such a great explanation. I appreciate that. Okay, I want to move a little bit into body image because I know we only have you for so long. So I know that's something that you touch on in the book as well. And it's definitely something that I am interested in furthering my knowledge in as well, because, you know, just for my, you know, my own clients and my audiences. So what are some tools that people can use to start improving their body image?
Ah, such a great question. So I think first, again, it goes back to this like unpacking and understanding what's affected your body image. And really having a better understanding of like all the different factors that play into like how you feel in your body. I think too, you know, this awareness, when you start to be aware of the different things that impact it, then you can decrease some of those behaviors. So for example, like early on in this process, like reducing body checking. So that body checking of like, oh, I walk, me, it was always my stomach. Like I'd walk by any reflective surface and my eyes would go right to my stomach, right? That's body checking. So noticing when you do that and trying to decrease that. Sometimes it helps to cover up mirrors and just kind of be able to, you know, not have that kind of, when you feel very heightened with your body image, that can help at first. I also think, you know, one of the top things that my clients will tell me helps, especially at the beginning, is when they diversify what they, their social media feed.
Yeah.
And follow bodies of all different sizes, because it seems so small and insignificant, but this is literally the one thing that everyone was like, oh my gosh, this has had such an impact on my body image already. Because yeah, you know, the most of what we see in the news and on TV and in movies and on our social media feeds represents like less than 5% of what the population is. Like people don't, most people don't look like that.
Right. So, or even really, naturally don't look like
that. Yeah. Naturally. And let alone, yeah, with like Facetune and like all Photoshop and all these things. Right. So following people of all different body sizes, I think is such an important step in the body image piece. And yeah, just, you know, a lot of it is this like sitting in the suck that my friend Bree Campos, Body Image with Bree, talks about. I quote her in the book. Because yeah, you know, the body image stuff is really difficult and it can feel understandably like really hard to give up this idea of, you know, that, oh, I'm going to get to this weight, or, oh, I might never be in like a socially acceptable body. And so a lot of it is just the sitting in the suck and using tools to help process those feelings and emotions that are coming up, and using, you know, coping strategies. And over time, it does get easier. And especially as you start to change the media that you're consuming, both like social media and images, but also, yeah, who are you learning from? Who are you reading? Trying to, especially in the early stages, but even going forward, trying to create this like diet culture bubble of, you know, just really positive messages and just more like weight inclusive and body positive messages, I think can be so important.
Yeah, I mentioned that.
Yeah, that's such a great way to put it, I think. Oh, no, no, I was just saying like, that's such an amazing way to put it. Yeah.
I was just going to say that I've mentioned a few times here on the podcast, I don't know, we'll be talking about, oh, are people still doing this diet or whatever? And then, and I'll be like, I honestly don't know, because I feel like I live in like an anti-diet bubble on social media where I don't even see if people are talking about this anymore or what the trend is. So it's kind of interesting that it does really help when you really shift your social media feed or the media that you consume, because it really is so, so powerful.
Yep.
That's so
totally
true.
I agree.
Yeah. We, you know, just before we get to our little, we have a tiny little fun goodbye segment, but just before we get to that, I feel like of anybody, someone who has a book coming out, so it'll be the 9th, February 9th. So that'll be 6 days from when this comes out. I feel like you have your finger on the pulse. Do you have any inkling of where diet culture is going to pivot next, or wellness culture is going to pivot next? Is there something on the horizon?
Oh gosh. I mean, I just think we're probably going to see more and more of this co-opting of the weight inclusive kind of language and co-opting of trying to be more body positive and inclusive, but really at the end of the day, it not being about that. I mean, it's the same thing I think we're seeing with companies jumping on like the anti-racism bandwagon, but it being mostly like lip service and not really actually culture, like changing anything fundamentally.
That's a good point.
Right.
So yeah, I think we're just going to keep seeing more of that as it gets more popular. And we'll just have to, yeah, be much more into like, okay, let's pull this apart and let's just see like, what is this really?
Right. Well, you know, our little goodbye segment is always what's been tasty for us this week. And we usually just say something, whether it's a food or a TV show or something that we find tasty. Maybe I'll do, our podcast definitely has a tasty this week, which is Unapologetic Eating. And that'll be coming out February 9th. And we're really, really excited because then we can actually start talking. We've been very, very privileged to get copies ourselves. We can start talking about what's in the book with other people, which will be really fun. Mm-hmm. But I'll say mine very quickly. Thomas, my partner, and I have started putting lime in our sparkling water, and we love it. Just like something really simple, makes it really fancy around the house, like we're at a hotel, and that's been my tasty this week.
Love it. All right. Well, yeah, we'll ask you, Alyssa, what's been tasty for you this week?
So is this like food related or like anything related? Anything
you want, really.
Okay. That's what I thought. So yeah, the first thing that came up for me is I've been doing this Instagram live interview series, and it's, you know, kind of in the lead up to my book, but also a chance for me to just like be on the other side of the microphone and talk to people. And I've just had the most like amazing conversations with people that have been just very like off the cuff and just gone in directions that I didn't expect. And so I've been really loving like that energy and just, yeah, being able to chat with people in that way.
Nice. I love that. That's really awesome. So maybe actually, since you mentioned Instagram, you can let our listeners know where they can find you and how they can get their hands on your book, Unapologetic Eating, as well.
Sure. So on Instagram, I am at Alyssa Rumsey RD. My website is also alyssarumsey.com. And then Unapologetic Eating is out on February 9th, anywhere books are sold. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop, IndieBound, all of those.
And honestly, awesome. An amazing gift for somebody. If you know somebody who has no idea about any of this stuff, it's explained so well. And you feel like you want to talk to them about diet culture, but you're not sure how to start the conversation. I think this would be the perfect gift too.
Oh, thank you. I love that idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. We're very excited for you and your book, and yeah, best of luck. And hopefully we'll stay in touch on social media.
Yeah, definitely. It's been lovely to meet you.
Yeah, you both as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alyssa.
All right.
Right. Well, wow. What an amazing interview with Alyssa. What did you think, Tarek?
I thought it was fantastic. I thought, you know, I think one of the best things about the book that I'm enjoying and one of the best things about the interview is that Alyssa is very clear about the way that she describes these different factors that have to do with diet culture and with the biology of dieting and the biology of nutrition. And it makes it so much more pleasurable to go mm-hmm. through the material because mm-hmm. it's not hard to read at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I was so excited to talk to her. I don't know if you, I mean, obviously you guys noticed, but I said welcome so much.
Welcome.
Because you're all welcome. Because I was literally bubbling over when we were interviewing her. Because I
don't
was
think
just
you said
really
it that much. I think you said it a beautiful amount.
No,
you said
I said
a beautiful amount.
What do you mean?
It was great.
I said
everyone loved it. Everyone's cheering for you. Everyone's cheering for you.
What do you mean? I said it a beautiful amount.
Well, you said welcome a lot. I don't think so.
No. I said, oh. I literally said
what? Oh. Oh, right. Okay, sorry. I'm back. Welcome a lot. That's our new way to intro guests now. Next guest on the pod. Welcome a lot. We are so happy to have you. As one of my favorite podcasts says, when they intro their guests, they say, "Put your ears open for the guest," instead
that.
Of "put your hands together."
Right. Oh, that's
so
great.
Welcome a lot.
Welcome so much to the No BS Nutrition Podcast.
Welcome so much. Oh, that's what it was. Welcome so much.
Oh gosh. Okay. All right. Well.
And goodbye so much to all of you right now. And we'd love to have you give us a 5-star rating, a review of the podcast. Tell us what you thought of this interview. Definitely make sure to check out Alyssa on her social media and check out the book. She's an absolute powerhouse. And I would also recommend checking out her website because it's very interesting to go through there. And you can meet the rest of the team that works with her at her dietetics company, I guess, at her business. Her practice. And also just hang out with us, send us a DM. Go like that gorgeous picture of Hannah and I on our Instagram. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.